This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is producing this fine show. He's on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Special extended version of the show for you this afternoon, taking you through until H&L, right up until 4 o'clock. Jay Richardson, normally from the Big Show, is going to join us for that last hour. Remus, you'll be a little bit more involved in the last hour, and I'll be here for a little while as well. Lots to talk about in the hockey world. First hour, Winnipeg Jets. Final 2 hours, we get you ready for your hockey pools with our annual fantasy hockey preview show. Richie, Ezzy, good morning, gentlemen. It's been a couple weeks since we've been on. We had last week off for Yom Kippur. It's good to see you both.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. I'm a little bit under the weather, but I'm here and ready to go. And I'm excited to do our annual fantasy preview show. What is this, 4 years now? 3 years or 4 years. It's always good because everybody's getting ready for the regular season and their fantasy pools. And just to tease everybody, towards the end of the show, I have my five tips on how to run an awesome hockey pool. So if anybody hasn't run a hockey pool and they want to know how to run a successful hockey pool, I have my five tips. It's kind of like Letterman's top 10, but Ezzy's top five.
Remus, have you run a hockey pool before?
I've run way too many pools. I'm an expert at it.
Really? So you don't need Ezra's tips?
No.
Okay, we'll see about that.
It's okay, though. Remus doesn't take my tips or talk to me really...
I text you and then you don't respond, so whatever.
I was busy last night. I was having a quiet night.
I'm trying to show plan, Ez.
I haven't been feeling well. I stayed home, so I don't want you to take that personally. I love you. You're a good friend.
Ezzy picked apples off the apple tree last night.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. Richie, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Let's get started talking about the big news out of Winnipeg Jets camp this week. And we'll get into the actual on-ice training camp battles a little bit later on in about 30 minutes time or so. But Kevin Cheveldayoff, Winnipeg Jets general manager, he's now the general manager for another additional 2 years as the team has extended his contract for two more seasons. The timing of this to me is peculiar. Richie, I'll start with you. Why now? Why did Kevin Cheveldayoff get a 2-year contract extension earlier this week?
I'm not sure, Drew. We know from Mark Gibbon's press conference that he's very impressed with Kevin Cheveldayoff and he wanted to lock him up further term. Looking at it from an outsider perspective, and we're not subjected to everything that goes on in that locker room and in that organization, but it's an odd move because he had three years left remaining on his contract. You've seen 2 years worth of work from him, three drafts and 2 years worth of work. You could argue that none of the drafts yet you can really judge, even though they talked about how good the drafts were. I think that's a little odd because the drafts could look good now, but who knows what happens down the road. And a lot of the draft work is done by the scouts, in so much as, aside from the first-round pick, really, Kevin Cheveldayoff said to us at the draft, really, after that first-round pick, it's the scouts really take over. So, sure, you have to run the draft. Sure, you have to organize it. But it's tough to judge it on that level. And then when you look at it in terms of the team performance, well, there's been a team in transition and there's been some changes. And a lot of the team now is kind of Kevin Cheveldayoff's team with his fingerprints all over it. But nothing's really happened that would indicate to me that he is in need or deserves an extension. Now, that doesn't mean that he needs to be fired. Absolutely not. But to me, you give him a 5-year deal, which is a fair amount of time. That's kind of long, I think, probably for first-year general managers, at least at the time he got it. And then you extend him after 2 years. I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff wasn't going to go anywhere after year three. I mean, year five of this deal. I mean, it's not like, I don't think he's going to chip over to the New York Rangers. He's a Saskatchewan boy. He's had a chance with the Jets. They gave him their first opportunity. By all accounts, he's pretty loyal. It's weird. And I just don't know why they did it.
I think it's pretty clear that even though it's still early in Kevin Cheveldayoff's tenure. I think Jets owner Mark Chipman is saying that I don't need to see one more or two more years. I'm going to give him the extra 2 years because I have confidence in him long term. And sure, it's up for fans and us in the media to, you know, raise questions about the timing and everything. And, you know, I have to be honest with Richie, too. It caught me by surprise. It caught others by surprise. But as far as the job that Chevy's done, I do think he's done a good job. And I know that fans in Winnipeg want the playoffs now. And the Jets didn't miss the playoffs by much last year, 4 points. And you can say whatever you want, but the Jets have been pretty competitive in their first 2 years. There have been highs and lows. But I do think the team is going in the right direction. And sure, there have been some signings that I haven't liked and others haven't liked. And you know, maybe there are areas of the team that haven't been addressed. But, you know, just back to the extension, I think that, you know, True North has the utmost confidence in Chevy. And they don't need to see any more, you know, in the immediate future, Richie. They're basically saying, no, we could have done this a year from now. And I'm not defending it. I'm just saying that it's pretty clear that they feel that confident in Chevy that they want him to be here for a long time, even more than 3 years.
Where does that confidence stem from?
It has to be the direction the team's going in. Because if the direction the team is going in wasn't good, they wouldn't do it.
Right, but if they're going in that positive direction, and I tend to agree with you that they are, mm-hmm. why do it now? Why do it at the beginning of this year? Why not, you know, by most accounts, this seems like that's a pretty good make or break year for the Jets and Claude Noel. We'll talk about Claude Noel in a bit. But, you know, why not wait till after the season? He's made some moves this offseason. Why don't we see how those? Why doesn't the organization see how those moves play out before giving him a 2-year contract extension?
When you look at his tenure overall, I mean, I don't know what he's really done here to say, okay, we need to absolutely give this guy an extension. You look at it coming into the first year, his hands were tied with a lot of players, but, you know, the contracts that he had, Andropov and all those guys who are making way too much money, Hainsey, et cetera, et cetera. But when you look at it in terms of what he's done, you know, trade-wise, he's traded Johnny Oduya, got a nice haul, traded with his former boss, Stan Bowman, traded with Stan Bowman again for the Frolik deal. Really, aside from the Setoguchi deal, which is recent, he hasn't really made any deals. What other trades has he made?
Well,
of consequence.
It's Ponikarovsky after he signed him foolishly,
right,
obviously.
But, I mean, he got drafted for that. That's fine. But the point is that, like, there's been no real trades, Drew.
Sure.
So the trading venue, I don't think, is somewhere you can say, oh, he's excelled at. Now, you can't say he's done poorly. He just really hasn't done anything. In free agency, I mean, he signed Jokinen. That signing was a poor signing. I think aside from that, what else? I mean, the waiver claims that Klitson might end up being all right. It might end up being good, but there's been a bunch of waiver claims that haven't been so good. Some have been. And that's probably a sign as to depth. So when you look at that, you know, whatever. And then you look at the draft. Well, the draft seems to be solid. But, you know, we'll still wait. But the draft seemed to be solid. Who knows? So overall, there hasn't been, to me, enough to indicate, oh, this guy absolutely deserves an extension. Now, again, I'm not calling for him to be fired. I think the 5-year term was fair to start with. It's generous, and it's fair to get an idea of what he's doing.
Right. It's right. If he had a 2-year deal or a 3-year deal initially, I'd say that's not a long enough time for a general manager to shape his vision of the team. But 5 years, you know, give him that contract extension after the 4th year if you're happy.
Right.
You know, why after 2 years? And, I mean, I've heard the argument that this is how the Chipmans do business. And that's all. And loyalty is important. I like loyalty. I don't have a problem with that.
He's got 3 years, though.
Right. It's not like this is like it was push comes to shove here. Loyalty is a good thing. But, you know, let's make sure that you're being loyal to the right people.
Just back to what Richie was talking about, though, and the moves that Kevin Cheveldayoff has made and what maybe would be the reason for the extension and really how he has shaped this team. And Richie's right. I mean, Chevy has not made that many moves, even though this past summer was probably his busiest, not to mention, you know, the 3 big RFAs that needed to be signed, but the Devin Setoguchi move, the Frolik move, and even if you want to throw in the signing of Matt Halaschuk, it wasn't a trade because the Wild didn't re-sign him. Sorry, pardon me.
Predators.
Predators didn't re-sign him, pardon me. I had Setoguchi in my mind because of the Wild, but the most significant moves Chevy has made is re-signing Kane, is re-signing Enstrom, is re-signing Wheeler, Little, and Pavlik. And those are the locking up the core, because when you have 11 players under contract past the 2015-16 season, those are really the big moves he has made. Now, again, Olli Jokinen hasn't been the greatest signing. Now, we still have one more year to see what he can do, and sure. I have to believe that he'll be better this year. So you can point out certain signings that weren't good, and Alexei Ponikarovsky didn't work out as well, and then he was moved to the New Jersey Devils. But I think, again, in kind of general terms, I do think the team is moving in the right direction. And Richie mentioned the draft, and of course, the scouts, Marcel Como, those guys have probably a greater impact, but Chevy also has an impact with the drafting, and I do think they've drafted really well, specifically 2011 to 2013, even 2012, Trouba, but specifically years 1 and 3, I think those draft hauls are turning out to be really good. And that's really what I'm looking at as far as this extension goes. You know, he's here for the long term.
Let me ask you this question, though. What happens if Little and Wheeler and Bogosian take a step back this year?
That's possible. I mean, if you look at the contracts as a whole, I look at them as, you know, what did I think was value at that time or fair value? I think Bogosian, I thought, was fair value. I thought Enstrom, which the contract's been quite criticized, I thought that was fair value based on the market as well. So I like those contracts. Wheeler was a little bit more than I thought he was worth, but not crazy more. I thought Little was considerably more than I thought he was worth. So you look at all those contracts. Kane, I thought a little bit more, but not too much more. So he was kind of like Wheeler, like close enough. Ladd at the time I thought was a little bit more, and that contract turned out to be really good. So who knows? But again, as yeah, I don't know if those contracts, re-signing guys for generally market value, is anything to say that, oh, he's an absolute keeper or not. I mean, like Brian Little, like the guys they gave the contracts to, I'm not sure they get much more anywhere else. You know, I'm not sure they get considerably less, but I'm not. It's a solid job again, but it's not. You know, I'm not saying it's a bad job, but it's a solid job. But you want to see more of. This is the thing. Everybody talks about all the prospects the team has. They got Trouba, and they got Scheifele, and they got Morrissey. First of all, they're picking the top 15 every year. And they got Patan, and they Kosmachuk, and they have Lowry, and they have all these guys. Great, you know, and certainly as a Jets fan, you hope they turn out. But Nashville's got Seth Jones. You know, and Nashville has got Forsberg, and Dallas has Nikushkin, and Dallas has a bunch of young, Oleksiak and other defensemen, and Minnesota has Granlund, and Minnesota has Coyle, and St. Louis has Tarasenko, and St. Louis has Schwartz. It's not like you're the only team with young talent. So how else do you gain the edge? And I don't know if we haven't seen the answer to that yet. You need more time. But I'm not sure you need 5 more years. Now, at the end of the day, if they fire him, it's the Chipman's and Thompson's money. So, I mean, it doesn't count against the cap. So it's not a big deal, really.
It just goes back to the point, and I think this is what you're trying to say, is why the urgency now? Why the urgency to do it at the start of season 3?
I heard an interview with Kevin Chevalier, and I think it was, I don't think Kevin Chevalier was approaching Mark Chipman and saying, hey, I need a 2-year extension.
No, it sounds like it's just out of the blue. Yeah. Chipman went to Chevalier, and if I'm under contract and somebody's going to extend my contract for 2 years, it's a pretty easy answer to say yes, thank you very much.
But what I want to talk about after the break, is what this means for Claude Noel.
I think that's a good time to go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. Winnipeg Jets game day. They're in St. Paul, Minnesota. 7 p.m. puck drop. The game can only be heard here on TSN 1290. Not being streamed anywhere, not on TV anywhere. So tune to TSN 1290, your home of the Winnipeg Jets for tonight's Jets Wild exhibition game. 7 p.m. puck drop here on this fine station. Richie, before the break, you wanted to talk about what the Kevin Chevalier extension means for Winnipeg Jets head coach Claude Noel.
Well, it probably means they have a lot more. The Jets organization has a lot more confidence in Kevin Chevalier than they do Claude Noel.
Seems like that would be fair, considering he was tooth and nail just to get an extension this summer.
He got a 1 year extension, so he's got a year left after this season now. And well, most NHL people will tell you that year doesn't mean much. If he doesn't get the job done this year, he's likely gone.
Yeah.
And I think that says something about the fact that Shevadayoff, without any talk about it, gets 2 years onto his 3 years, so he's essentially has a 7 year deal. And Claude Noel kind of has to beg, borrow, and steal for that fourth year. So I think you can see, and there are people who will tell you, know, they're not sure Shevadayoff is Noel's biggest supporter, you know, from day one. And I think based on the actions, I think Chevy wants to take a wait and see approach with Claude Noel, which is to me a lack of confidence. I mean, 2 years, and I realize it was a shortened season for one. At the end of the day, two seasons is two seasons here, mm-hmm. and you have an idea of exactly what you're getting.
I don't mind Kevin Cheveldayoff, you know, wanting to say to Claude Noel, you know, prove it to
yeah.
me. I don't have a problem with yeah. that. I think that, but it's sort of backward. It's sort of, I mean, odd that on the one hand, Kevin Cheveldayoff is saying to Claude Noel, prove it to me that you deserve to be here long term. And then on the other hand, you know, Mark Chipman and David Thompson are saying to Kevin Cheveldayoff, you don't really have to prove it to me.
Think about public, because every time they come out and say something like the Jets, there's a purpose behind it. There's a reason behind it. They've kind of practiced it as far as I'm concerned. Has the management or even ownership ever really come out as in support of Claude Noel publicly? I can't recall.
Do you really want them to do that, though? Isn't that usually the kiss of death?
No, but you know what I mean in terms of yeah. what he's doing, the job. I mean, you don't really hear a ton of positive praise for him, do you?
Well, we have to also...
I mean, have you? I don't think you have.
I think we've heard Kevin Cheveldayoff at certain points and during the contract extension that Claude Noel got, which was for 1 year. But we have to consider as well that Claude Noel had the history with the Manitoba Moose the year before mm-hmm. the Jets came here. But this mm-hmm. is his first head coaching gig in the NHL. So it's not... And not, you know, that different than Barry Trotz in Nashville. And remember, we talked to David Poile about that. Barry Trotz didn't have any head coaching experience in the NHL, and he's been there for, what, 15 years, 17 years now? So it's not to say that Claude Noel can't be a coach long-term for the Jets, and I think he's done a pretty good job in the first 2 years. But this is an important year for many reasons. A lot of the Atlanta Thrashers' leftovers are gone now, aside from the guys that are part of the core, but you're talking about guys like Nick Antropov or Ron Hainsey or other guys
weight.
the guys that everybody knew that weren't going to be part of the team. But now you have other players that are coming along that are going to also be part of that nucleus. Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele. I mean, how Claude Noel does with Mark Scheifele, and it doesn't just all, you know, rest on him, but this is a big year because if they don't advance, and that doesn't necessarily mean the playoffs, but if the Jets as a group take a step back, then you have to think that Claude Noel, his tenure as a coach, is going to be reevaluated with a little bit more of a close eye. Then if they're really successful, he gets them into the playoffs, then you have to think that then you're looking at possibly getting a contract extension before next year. So it's a really important year for Claude Noel.
To me, the silence that occurred between Kevin Cheveldayoff's end-of-year press conference and the announcement that Claude Noel got the one-year contract extension, which took, I think, at least a number of weeks before in between, I think that silence speaks volumes to how the organization really does feel about Claude Noel on a long-term basis.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think they want him to, I think, you know, somebody asked me this, if Noel doesn't make the playoffs, is he back next year? And barring the Jets having the worst run of injury luck in the NHL, I think it's a playoffs or bust year for Claude Noel. And the organization will eat the 1 year remaining on his contract because, you know, that's sort of, you know, your severance pay, for lack of better
definition. No, but Drew, it's possible. But at this point, that's all speculation. I mean, nobody knows the answer to that. That's completely you speculating.
So. I would think Drew's right about that, Izzy. I think that he's got a year to make the playoffs, in my opinion.
But that's not... You can't be right or wrong about that.
Well, you can be right or wrong in a year.
Well, exactly. But saying that right now is not, I mean, that's speculation. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that that's, you know, completely far-fetched. I'm just saying that we don't know that. You don't know what's going to happen in a year. If this happens, if that happens. For right now, I don't think that necessarily that they think that he's going to be here long-term or short-term. It's difficult to say. And again, long-term for a coach these days, 4 or 5 years is pretty long. I mean, if you look at coaches around the NHL, it seemed like John Tortorella was with the Rangers for 10 years. He was only there for 4 years. So, I mean, long-term, 3 or 4 years, that's enough for them to make the decision if they're going to keep you there. Now, again, I think that he's done a good job, and I think that when you look at this team this year, I don't necessarily know it's playoffs or bust and he gets axed, but I definitely think that he has to be taking the team in the right direction. I know that sounds like
cliche, but I think
for instance, the team's defense has to get better. He has to show that the special teams are getting better. He has to show that defensemen are basically committing to the style of hockey that he wants to play. Far too much in the first couple years, the Jets were playing kind of a discombobulated, freewheeling type of brand of hockey. Mm-hmm. And if he can show that the team has committed to him, and I think a lot of them have, then you look at, okay, we didn't make the playoffs, but we're still going to go an extra year. We're going to go an extra 2 years for you. So I'm just saying that I don't necessarily know that it's playoffs or bust, but it's up to you guys to form that opinion.
The thing is about it, as you know, I don't think if he makes the year, if they don't make the playoffs, that doesn't mean Claude Noel. To me, what it probably means is Claude Noel has coached the team to the position that I thought they would finish. The first 2 years, he basically coached the team to the position I thought they would finish, talent-wise. And I think this year, unless he gets them into the playoffs, which I think talent-wise likely won't be the case, then he might have just been a solid coach who didn't get the team over the hump, even though the hump would have been overachieving. That's what I mean, not underachieving. Talent-wise, I don't think he's been given a team that at any point in time is the odds-on favorite to be a playoff team.
I would agree with that statement. I think that's a good point. You look at, I mean, we've done it the last 2 years. You look at the Jets, and I think the first 2 years we said, we don't think this is a playoff team based on the talent that they've accumulated. And next week, when we do our season preview, we'll make that determination again. We'll say, you know, look at the conference they play in, look at the division they play in. Right. Are the Winnipeg Jets a playoff team? Right now, looking at it, I think that at best they're a fringe team. And so if they, you know, if they don't make the playoffs again, and if they finish a couple year points out of the playoffs, is that the coach's fault, or is that just a commentary on the actual talent they put on the ice?
Right, and as we know, sometimes it doesn't matter. The coach is the first guy that's going to be fired. It's the easiest guy to be fired. So you make a good point, though, and that's why, you know, when we have evaluated, the team over the last 2 years, you can't just put everything on one player or the coach or the assistant coach. It's an organizational thing. And I think that the Jets have, again, as I say, they've had moments where, you know, the fact that they were first in the Southeast Division for a while is impressive, but then they had the big slump, and you've seen this team on many nights have inconsistent efforts. You go back to those two home games against the Washington Capitals where they needed those points, and they could have really solidified a playoff spot, and they didn't. And you look at those, and you look at moments like that, and you say, okay, well, this team is still an immature team, and it's still a young team, but I look at players on this team who haven't taken the next step. And again, I'm not saying that Evander Kane hasn't been an excellent player over the course of his career in the last 2 years, but I think he can be even better. I think he can be a superstar and be a good two-way player. You know, Claude Noel's using him on the penalty kill during the preseason, things like that. Like, I want to see Evander Kane turn into the player that he also believes that he can be, like a top 15 player in the NHL. And things like that, those guys, they keep developing. Zach Bogosian turns into a number one shutdown defenseman, which he's already on a good path to be. Things like that, that'll determine, I think, if Claude Noel stays with the Jets, you know, 2-3 years after this year.
I think it's a fair commentary that you make as well there. It's a really make or break year for Claude Noel. And it just goes back to what you were saying about Kevin Cheveldayoff. It's odd that it's not a make or break year for him.
Well, it's early for that, but...
Well, I know it's early for that, but I mean, you know, it's,
I see your point. I mean, as you just said, the coach is way more dispensable. It's easier to get rid of the coach than 20 players. You've heard that cliche 1,000 times.
Sure.
And the GM controls the coach's fate, not the other way around.
Right. And that's why, I mean, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff is not showing the same amount of faith in Claude Noel that Mark Chipman is showing in Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I don't necessarily think that's a criticism of Kevin Cheveldayoff on my part. I think he's perfectly within his rights, and it's perfectly reasonable to say to Claude Noel, Claude, if you want to keep this going and if you want to be the head coach here, we demand to see results this year for the 2013-14 Winnipeg Jets. Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the players on the ice. A lot of talk from Winnipeg Jets training camp. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
12:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jets Wild, 7 p.m. puck drop live from the Xcel Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. The game can only be seen here on TSN 1290, actually heard here on TSN 1290. You can't see much through the radio. It's a little bit more difficult that way. Anyways, you can catch the action here on TSN 1290 in about 6.5 hours puck drop. We're with you till 4 p.m. H&L. From 4 to 6, and then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power panel takes you to puck drop at 7 p.m.
How about that, just quickly, how about that that new truck that Hustler's driving around town?
His truck, you know.
I hear he's driving a big truck. I haven't seen it yet, but we were talking about it earlier this week. It's big news, because he's going from a nice little small Japanese compact car to the big truck.
He's
big
got
news around here.
He's got a Hemi.
Yep.
He has a Hemi.
Remember that commercial?
Yeah, I don't even know what a Hemi is.
That thing got a Hemi?
Remus, have you been in the truck yet?
I've seen it. It's a beast.
It's fitting for Huss, though, and it's a good truck for Huss. We look forward to seeing that later on today. Gentlemen, training camp. You know, this is exhibition what? Exhibition game 5 of 8?
Yep.
Which is way too many exhibition games in my mind, but that's a separate issue for another day and time. You know, training camp battle. You know, let's start with the one that's sort of been, I think, to Jets fans, the most interesting battle. Scheifele versus Jokinen. How do you see that playing out so far? Who has got the lead if it's head to head for that second line center role, Scheifele or Jokinen so far?
They want Scheifele to have the lead. Obviously Claude Noel, you know, putting kind of Jokinen back in there for a bit. I think that's to put pressure on Scheifele to try and motivate. I mean, you hear, you know, Claude Noel says in the press he wants kind of Scheifele to play all the cliche 200-foot game, defensively responsible, all that stuff. I think, Drew, you're going to see the team try out Scheifele on that line at the beginning of the season, regardless of what happens down the stretch here, because they don't have any other alternatives. What are they going to do? Right. And that's, you know, everybody talks about these battles. It's better. The most important battles they don't have battles for. So that's the issue. And you look at, is it Scheifele or Jokinen? I don't think Jokinen works with Setoguchi and Kane. We know Jokinen doesn't work with Kane. I mean, maybe something will change, but their styles are they just do not mesh. So you look at Setoguchi, provides the speed and all that stuff. But you need a passer. And Scheifele comes up as a passer. So Scheifele is going to get a shot, I think. And Jokinen will start off with Frolik there, and that might actually work. And we'll see. I don't think you can read too much into those players' performance in the preseason, only because neither of them's really grabbed the bull by the horns. And even if Jokinen has a 2-goal game in preseason game 6, I mean, is that going to be the deciding factor? We know he doesn't have chemistry with Kane. So I think I think it's going to be little Scheifele, Jokinen to start the year. And Slater.
And Richie, we have 4 more exhibition games coming up tonight in St. Paul against the Wild, and a few more coming up. But in the first 4 games, I think you mentioned something that for me really nailed it on the head. Nobody's grabbed the bull by the horns. And I thought that the last game on Thursday night against the Minnesota Wild was really telling. They didn't play well. They lost the game. And you saw Claude Noel move around all of the forwards, with the exception of really that fourth line. Cormier, Peluso, and Telegan were the fourth line for the Jets against the Wild. But you had Ladd, Little, Wheeler on the top line, and that line is etched in stone. This year, that line is going to play together. It's it's the Jets' top line. It was a good line last year. That line, unless something drastic happens, they work together, they mesh together, they're signed long term. But the big thing is it going to be Jokinen or Scheifele? And everybody who asks us about that, I say, I don't think that anything is determined and might not be determined for the whole year. Because this is, you have a situation where you brought Ole Jokinen in for 2 years, $4.5 million a year, to be the second line center. You brought him in because he's big. You brought him in to get some goals. He's had a good career, and last year he didn't have a good year. But now, if you move him down to the third line, and you play him with Frolik and possibly James Wright or Matt Halaschuk, is that going to be more of a defensive line that can give you a little bit of offense? Well, there's a good chance that happens. And I agree with Richie. They want Mark Scheifele to be the second line center, right? Like, they want him to get the offensive minutes. They want him to play. But the thing with Mark Scheifele at this point is he's gained weight and he's looked good. But again, has he meshed well enough to make you think that this line is going to be dominant? Well, on Thursday night, that line wasn't very good. And with the exception of the one goal that was scored by Brian Little, the Jets weren't really that good as a unit offensively. And that's going to be, for me, And I know you've put it on Mark Scheifele quite a bit, Drew. It is going to be a huge determinant in how good the Jets are and if they make the playoffs, because Mark Scheifele is going to be depended on for a very important position. The center ice position is the most important position, mm-hmm. arguably with the exception of the goaltender, because of the responsibilities. But now Mark Scheifele is going to have to prove that he can stay there. And that's why I think that you might see him at times on the third and fourth lines, because I think there's going to be struggles, just like we saw.
If they move him down, and if he doesn't play there consistently, I mean, there's no evidence whatsoever that Olli Jokinen can come in there and be better than Mark Scheifele. It seems like they just consistently are trying to pound this, you know, square peg of Olli Jokinen into the round hole.
No, this is the thing, Drew. I mean, let me interrupt there for a second. There's no other alternatives. That's what I'm talking about.
Like, what's
Claude Noel going to do there? I mean, what's he going to do? Drop Dustin Bufflin in a second-line center? Like, in all honesty, the Ladd-Little Weir line plays well together. I've talked about breaking them up in the past because to spread around the wealth, that's not going to happen. And by all accounts, those guys want to play together too, which I think is a big, big factor there. And they all re-signed, and they're all back for the long haul. So, as you said, they're etched in stone. Then you get the other combos. There aren't a bunch of guys who play different positions. Like, there aren't Rich Peverleys and guys like that in this roster that can play wing, center, in different roles. And you can change them around. That's the problem.
I agree with you, but I'm saying that if Scheifele's your best, I think he is your best option even when he would be struggling.
Well, but
there only are two options. So, if Mark Scheifele this year, Drew, and I agree with Rich, he'll probably start on the second line of the team this year. If he starts struggling, then you move Olli Jokinen in there. And if they're both struggling, well, what do you do? Are you screwing up his development
right.
by putting him on the second best line with arguably your best player in Evander Kane, or do you want him to learn the more defensive responsibilities of the game, which he has learned at the junior level, but now you're in the NHL, and you're going against bigger defensemen, better defensemen, older defensemen, and that's the whole issue here, is he ready for that? And the only way we're going to know that is through regular season games. And again, it's the great debate right now, whether you think he's going to stick there or whether I think he's going to stick there. There's no right answer. There's no wrong answer. It's yet to be seen what will happen. Right now, it's clear that they're trying to see if it's going to work. And the exhibition games, I'm saying, he hasn't overwhelmed me with his chemistry with Kane. I haven't seen them clicking. But Mark Scheifele's strength is as being a playmaker. And that's what Kane needs on his line. And Jokinen is not a playmaker.
The thing is, for Scheifele, he's going from being the oldest player in the league to being one of the youngest players in the league. It's like when Drew leaves the studio and goes to the old folks' home.
Like you're a young gun there.
Yeah, but in all honesty, the problem is it's a lot easier, you know, to play when you're 20 years old in the OHL. And you know, Tim Campbell was talking about this on the pregame when I was doing it with him on Sunday. You know, if maybe it's better to start Scheifele off slowly, and that might be best for his development. But then, you know, we talked about the fact that the Jets play, I think, 7 of their first nine games at home. And so if you're playing for there's a contrast in terms of what you need to win versus maybe long term. Never mind the fact that Claude Noel could be in the last year of his deal. Last year as a coach of this team. And what does he want to do? Well, he wants to win. Kevin Cheveldayoff has a 13-year contract. and Claude Noel wants to win. And so Chevy can look at the big picture. And Noel can looks at the short term very much. You know, that happens very much with coaches and management. So there's a lot of balls in the air here, guys. But notwithstanding all of that, there's no centers in the system.
Not yet. I mean, Adam Lowry is probably the biggest center. You know, he's got the highest expectations, but we haven't been able to see anything of him because he's been injured all training camp.
I haven't seen Adam Lowry play at all. I can't speak to that.
I think if you look at the team, I mean, who are the centers that have the least bit of excitement around them, you know, down in St. John's? I mean, we know what Cormier is, and we know what you know those guys are. But I mean, it's either Eric O'Dell.
Yeah, that's your next option.
Or Adam Lowry if he gets off to a good start.
O'Dell, you need to. So it's a guy who at least played AHL, and he's a smart player. Not going to kill you with speed. Not the biggest guy, but he's a smart player. So that's really your next option. And it's not going to be Cormier. He's not playing above a fourth line role. So if that's the situation, unless there's somebody coming in from the outside, then you have what you have. I want to also talk about the third line left wing.
Yeah.
Because depending on what they do there with, you know, Halaschuk and Frolik and all those guys, a player that the Jets, you know, you thought they might call on because of his ties to the Moose, was Mason Raymond.
Sure, we said that on the free agent preview show. We said that.
It's on a tryout offer at the Leafs right now.
Yeah, and by and from what we've from what's been reported, he's basically, if they keep him, which they're apparently going to, third line left wing around there, he's going to sign for a deal in $900,000 range, mm-hmm. which is certainly within the team budget. So you wonder, a guy who can provide speed, and you know, you talk about James Wright, you talk about Eric Tangrady. I think Mason Raymond's an upgrade on both of them.
The Jets could have had him. I mean, obviously, if they wanted him, they could have, you know.
Now, they know more about him than we do in terms of the Moose and all that stuff, but it would have been an interesting picture. Anyhow, the point is, you talk about Halaschuk. I think it looks all right. And Frolik looks pretty good. As Claude Noel said earlier, it looks like a NHL player, which he is.
Sure.
You get to the point where, you know, these guys are battling, and then the fourth line guys, Peluso, these guys, a lot of these guys are battling. A lot of these guys didn't have NHL jobs last year, could have had a hard time to get an NHL job. So I don't think anything's really happened overnight here. So what I'm trying to say is, you hear about battles for second line center, you hear about defense battles, and you hear about depth battles on the bottom lines. There aren't as many battles as people make it out to be.
Well, it's not, or the battles that exist are not battles of, you know, really top end talent having to, you know, play a lesser role.
Like, it's interesting to see what'll happen, but I mean, you're not talking about, you know, Crosby, Malkin for the first line.
No,
center.
These guys are for the most part, you know, fringe guys or bottom guys battling for bottom positions. It's, I mean, this isn't a world beater of a team. Let's not get carried away with the, you know, a lot of talk about the depth has improved. Yeah, it's improved, but it's had really nowhere else to go but up from the first couple of years where they were playing guys who really just didn't belong very much in the NHL anymore.
I think it's significant, though. I think some of the best players in the preseason, I said this to Drew on Thursday night after the game, I thought James Wright was one of the best players. Now, yes, James Wright had only had 5 points last year. He's not going to wow you with a 20-goal, 50-point season, or at least I wouldn't expect that to happen. But he's a very good skater, and he does the little things right. And that's what you probably want if your third line is going to be more of a checking line.
Ezzie, let me ask you this question. You talk about James Wright, and I like his game as well.
Right.
On a Stanley Cup contender, is James Wright on the roster?
I think, yeah, it's possible. Maybe on a deeper team, he's a fourth liner. But you look at who they've added. Devin Setoguchi is an improvement over Kyle Wellwood at right wing on the second line. And again, for him to be completely successful, you know, he's going to have to score 20 or 25 goals and get 50 points. Michael Frolik had 10 points for the Chicago Blackhawks, Stanley Cup winning team, and is a great penalty killer. Now, they need the penalty kill and the power play to be better, and I think they've brought in personnel to make that happen, specifically with Frolik on the penalty kill. Mm-hmm. And they're, as I mentioned before, they're starting to use Evander Kane, and I think they should use him on the PK. A lot of teams will use their top players on the PK. That's the area of least concern for me on this team. To me, it all starts with goaltending, defense, and that second line becoming more of a solid, consistent second line. To me, I think the guys that they've added, Matt Halaschuk, I think, is great. He's a grinder, and he's a guy that will fit in on the third or fourth lines. But again, there are a lot of what-ifs and questions, and it's not just one player or one line. I mean, it's across the roster. And time is going to tell if the Jets get that right early on in the season.
Let's go to break. When we come back, I want to spend some time talking about the defense in training camp so far. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, speaking of numbers, the Jets have a glut of defensemen in training camp, probably too many based on the numbers that they're going to require at the start of the year. They got rid of one, Ian White, released from his PTO contract yesterday, I believe. Are you surprised to see Ian White get the release from his PTO? Ezzy, I'll start with you.
Not surprised, because he wasn't really a part of the plans until a few weeks ago, but maybe a little bit surprised because he had the NHL experience with Calgary, Detroit, and a few other teams. But he didn't really wow me in the exhibition game. And again, you know, a guy doesn't prove his worth in one exhibition game. But for a guy like Ian White, he does, as far as making this team. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ian White had to show that, you know, they should give him a contract. And we've already talked about all the defensemen on one-way contracts. So you're talking about Paul Postma, Adam Party, Jacob Trouba. Those are the guys, Richie, that are fighting for those bottom pairing spots. We know that the big guys like Enstrom and Byfuglien and Bogo and Klitsam, those are going to form, you know, the top four, most likely. You're going to see maybe Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart at times in that top four, depending on how he plays. And that's up to Claude Noel to decide if he wants to move up Mark Stewart, for example, Richie, if Grant Klitsam's not getting the job done. But for Ian White, it was tough because he's competing against other guys who are on those one-way contracts. And then you bring in a guy like Zach Redmond, who's on a two-way contract. Mm-hmm. But they have to think of a situation where, okay, do we want to give Ian White a one-way contract, or are we okay with the guys that we have already in the system, and we know that there's a guy like Zach Redmond who could possibly come up? So I'm not that surprised, and I think that you know, most likely you're going to see Paul Postma as the next guy in the lineup after Jacob Trouba, and then Adam Party's probably the guy behind him. I think that Paul Postma offers more versatility than Adam Party does, but there's going to be battles still left to won, because Jacob Trouba's a rookie, and it's not guaranteed that he's necessarily in the lineup the first game of the season.
Let me ask you this. If it's a battle, if it comes down to being between Ian White and Paul Postma, to me, Ian White's the better of the two players.
I don't know why we're having this debate, though. They let him go, but...
I'm questioning the decision.
I think what happened with Ian White was they brought him in first. You know, he's a smaller defenseman. This team needs to be a little more aggressive now, and they don't have too many aggressive players in the roster. But I think at the end of the day, Drew, what you saw was Ian White was brought in not only to challenge younger players, and the Jets ended up seeing that whatever Redmond and Postma could bring was likely equal to or exceeded what White could bring, or was in the realm of what White can bring, and they've already invested in these players and feel like they have upside, and Ian White is what he is. That's what happened in that regard. If you look at the Jets roster, they have seven defensemen signed to one-way deals, and then Trouba can be sent down to the minors directly, right, without having to pass through waivers.
Right.
Redmond's on a two-way contract also.
Right. He's on a two-way contract. So exactly. So Trouba, you know, as you mentioned, is that the top six, or are they a little bit concerned? I don't think Party's going to crack the top six unless there's an injury. Postma may, because he could take Trouba's spot. Or Redmond maybe is intrigued them enough. I mean, Postma to me isn't going to – I prefer Redmond to Postma. And the question is, what do you think of Trouba? And I think they give Trouba a cup of coffee, but I think they're also are willing to consider putting him in the AHL. You don't have to worry about the rules in terms of the CHL, because Trouba was in Michigan, so he can go right to the AHL and he can play there. So these are the decisions. Again, the Jets' back end has some concerns with it. There are some holes. And I don't think Adam Party has come in, and I don't think he's done anything different than what we probably expected. And the rest of the D is the same. And you look at the top four, I mean, Byfuglien and Enstrom playing together yesterday at practice. Is that the combination they're going to go with? Byfuglien's looked really good. No question about the talent. If he's in shape, he's looked really good. Can that combination, regardless of the weight, defend well enough? Can Byfuglien and Enstrom defend well enough? And even if they're not paired up against the top pairing on the other side, and if that's Klitsam and Bogosian, can that pairing defend well enough? Mainly Klitsam in that respect. So there are questions here.
On Thursday night, they had Tobias Enstrom with Zach Bogosian.
Right.
And then on Tuesday night, they had Grant Klitsam with Dustin Byfuglien. Now, I actually think that those pairings work the best for me if that's who you're going to slot in the top four. Because we'll see Tobias Enstrom and Dustin Byfuglien on the power play together. They're just really, really dynamic, and mm-hmm. they feed off of each other. Enstrom's the playmaker from the point. He doesn't have a very good shot. And Byfuglien has the big cannon. But as far as your everyday pairings, your five-on-five pairings, you know, Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian feed off of each other, and I think Klitsam and Byfuglien feed off of each other, and with the left shooting options that the Jets have, it's either bring Mark Stewart up in there, and I think he can play the second role, but I think you want him to play more of a third pairing role, and that's where you put in Jacob Trouba most likely with Mark Stewart. But I think that right now there's a lot of questions. Who works with who? You know, is there going to be a situation where one guy isn't really meshing well? Because take Ron Hainsey out, and now there's 25 minutes. And what we've talked about before is that's going to have to be a committee approach to replace those minutes. I don't think one guy is necessarily going to replace those minutes because they don't have someone of Ron Hainsey's mm-hmm. level, I think, just to step in for him. I think Grant Clinton still, for all intents and purposes, last year was his real coming out party. It was his best year in the NHL. In a short season, because before that he kind of was up and down with the Blue Jackets and the AHL. So,
based on the contract they gave Grant Klitsamezi of 3 years at just over $6 million, and based on the way they've been playing him, they consider him to be a top four defenseman.
Yep,
and he better be.
Yeah, because otherwise they got that big gaping hole, and we've been saying that since the free yep. agency period, and since it became clear that Grant Clitsam, they yep. expect Grant Clitsam to play that role.
And with all due respect to Mark Stewart, who is a heart and soul guy who can yep. block shots and is tough, he does not skate well enough, move the puck well right. enough, or shoot the puck well enough to be in your top four.
Right. But for a third pairing defenseman, he does a great job. But
that's what he is.
And yeah. and I am a big fan of Grant Clitsam, and I know that, again, you know, Ron Hainsey was really good. Like, the thing with, you know, the whole lockout thing and the fact that Ron Hainsey didn't score any goals, I'm not just going to say, oh, he was tops in the NHL and blocked shots, but he really did do a good job last year. And that's why the debate happened towards the trade deadline, where it was, do you trade him? Do you keep him? And then a lot of people in the offseason were saying, hey, maybe the Jets are going to re-sign him. Because
For 1 year and $2 million, which is all that Ron Hainsey got in Carolina.
Right.
And I know the Jets fans have an irrational hate on for Ron Hainsey. Mm-hmm. I think for 1 year and $2 million, he would be well worth the money to be in Winnipeg for this coming season.
For example, top four defensemen, again, not like my apples that grow in my tree in my backyard, top four defensemen don't grow on trees. And that's why, you know, Andrew Ferentz leaving the Boston Bruins, now a guy like Adam McQuaid is going to have to step into the top four, or Dougie Hamilton has to step into the top four. That they don't just come along, veteran defensemen. And that's why, you know, Carolina loses Yoni Pitkinen, and they have Ron Hainsey sitting there. They go, well, we got to sign him. I mean, veteran defenseman, 30-year-old veteran defenseman who can play 20, 25 minutes a game are just hard to find. And I don't think sometimes that's appreciated enough out of defensemen. People say, oh, okay, you know, he doesn't score that much or whatever. Well, he's got to go out there and he's got to defend against the other team's best players, or so, at the very least second best line.
Like
that's,
you said,
that's not easy.
Like you said, it's a lot of minutes that somebody now has to come in and replace. And, you know, for better or worse, whatever you think about him, you know, the fact that he played that minute should tell you something about how much the team had to rely on him, whether
right.
or not they wanted to, injuries, everything else. But, you know, if Toby Enstrom goes down again for the third straight year, You've got a lot of trouble in terms of who's taking all those minutes.
If there's a lot of injuries on the back end, whether it be Bufflin's knees or Enstrom, whatever it may be,
Bogosian's wrist,
and Trouba doesn't step up and play a huge role, this team is in significant trouble.
Quickly, and I mean quickly, before we go to break, how much stock do you put into the terrible power play that we've seen from the Jets
Nothing.
So far this preseason?
Nothing. Don't overreact to that. They're trying things out. They're working around what they're, you know, knew this, knew that. At the end of the day, you know that they're going to have Bufflin and Strom healthy, and those and the Wheeler lad little line, you know, and you're going to add a little bit. See what you can do with the second pairing, but you have what you have. It's going to be similar to what they've had in years past. There's not some crazy new scheme they're bringing in. So take the average of the past 2 years, and you bet on that being the case, and it likely will be.
And Jets fans would have to hope that the execution was better than it was last year when it was a bottom five power play in the NHL.
I think their PK will be better this year, though.
I think their PK will be, and we'll talk about that again next week on the on our season preview show, where we really break down the Jets and the NHL as a whole. Let's go to break. When we come back, we shift our focus to your hockey pools. We get you ready for them only on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.